the ones who's coming up, and the world is in their hands. When you teach the children to jump the very best you can. But just let it be. Na, 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 na. The world won't get no better. We gotta change it now, just you and me. Wake up all the doctors, make the old people well. They're the ones who suffer and who catch all the hair. But they don't have so very long before their judgment day. So won't you make them happy before they pass away?
All right, everyone, welcome back. We're speaking with Dr. Craig Albert, Associate Assistant Professor. Associate Professor, Political Science.
As long as I don't mess up on there.
No, that's right. And you're also directing the Master of Arts
of Intelligence and Security Studies. So, yep, I'm the graduate director of the Intelligence and Security Studies program. Any listeners out there that might be interested in a graduate degree, you have a week left to apply. So if you're interested in war studies, strategic cybersecurity, and intelligence theory and data collection, this is the program for you. Just give me a call or email me.
Man, I'm still amazed at how Augusta University is just blowing up. I mean, just great things happening at that school.
This is the place to be. I couldn't imagine anybody living in the CSRA going to another university. No offense to any of the other universities out there, but we're growing. Got a lot of money contributed to us by the governor. Has done a great job with the Board of Regents supporting us. You know, the cyber campus that we're developing just downtown Augusta starting to boom. And, of course, you know, on the Somerville campus, everything we have going on with the liberal arts, beautiful art studio and ceramic studio that got remade, multi-million dollar projects for just about every different college that we have on campus is amazing.
Awesome. And that building, the cyber building that's being constructed.
33 days it'll be done.
33. Wow.
I believe it's 33. Let me not get demoted in case it's 32. But about a month.
Yeah, about a month. I mean, and it's just amazing. I had the honor of having toured that building.
Oh, yeah.
I guess maybe 8-9 months ago, something like that. And we were amazed at how fast it was going up. A building that size being completed in, what is it, a year or less?
Yeah, less, yeah.
Yeah. And so one of the gentlemen was explaining to us that they were able to make it, what was it, sort of like a pre-modular type of building where they were able to bring in parts that were ready to just be put in place.
Modern engineering.
Yes.
It's over my head. Whatever they're doing, keep it up, folks.
Keep it up.
And students, bring your A game. Augusta University is a place to be, so.
I'll tell you, a lot of good things happening there. And so, of course, we have the honor of hearing from one of their faculty, as Dr. Craig Albert is with us now, speaking with me about power politics and the real world of politics. And in the real world, help us understand some more of what goes into the decision making when one of our presidents has to decide whether or not to strike. Uh-huh. We're talking about the possibility, as slim or as real as it may be, China at least talking about possibly attacking Taiwan in the years to come. Years ago, early 90s, Saddam Hussein made the comment that at least he thought that if he made a move against Kuwait, it would be cool. George Herbert Walker Bush is going to leave that to him. That was his business. America was going to stay out of it. Instead, when they made that move against Kuwait, they paid dearly because America moved in on them. And compare that, Dr. Albert, with what happened with Georgia, the nation of Georgia, when Russia moved in on them and we made no moves. And that president was thinking that we were going to come to their defense, and we didn't.
And there's, for each president, first of all, those are two what we would call in political science disparate, distinct case studies, completely different systematic scenarios. But people should realize that when we invaded Iraq in the 90s for retaliation for Saddam Hussein invading Kuwait, they had the fourth strongest military in the world, and we took them out in 4 days.
Wow.
So just all the listeners keep that in mind. When people say, well, what's the difference between that and what's going on today? Well, we fought a conventional war against Saddam Hussein's forces in the 90s. We didn't invade and occupy and try to liberate necessarily Iraq. We just wanted to achieve our objectives and not go any further. In fact, George H.W. Bush made their strategic decision, and they had meetings over this. Do we want to push to Baghdad, or do we just want to force the Iraqi government and forces out of Kuwait and make sure they don't go into Saudi Arabia or anything? And that's what the National Security Council and the Joint Military Command came to, is that, yeah, we just want Saddam out of that area and to stop killing the Kurds in the north and to keep them as much as they can from destroying the Shia in the south. And we established that no-fly zone over the north, which started all the retaliatory or preemptive airstrikes before the second Gulf War took place, before, you know, on the war on terror. So strategically, a president, to go back to the original question, what separates that from the Russian occupation of Georgia? Russia is a much bigger power player than Iraq was. Russia, again, only tried to get into Georgia to achieve minimum objectives. And so we decided that it wasn't worth going to a larger war to stop Russia from achieving limited goals in their war in Georgia in 2008. The effects of what Russia was doing compared to the effects of a United States war with Russia, the costs did not, and that the benefits of going to war with Russia would not have outweighed the costs of allowing Georgian land to be ceded over to the Russians, which is what happened. Two enclaves, two ethnically distinct enclaves in Georgia, came under autonomous rule. They were under autonomous rule and then came under more autonomous rule as a result of that action. So Georgia lost two, provinces or districts that have a different ethnic minority composite than the rest of the state of Georgia. In international relations, we call it a country states. It gets confusing when you start talking about Georgia, because we have the state of Georgia, yes, but then we have the country of Georgia. So one time in class, my student was like, "Russia invaded us?" I was like, "Stay awake. Stay awake.
When did that happen?
Stay awake.
How come I haven't been reading it in the news?
Like, didn't want that Patrick Swayze depicting that." No. Like, it's a movie. So when a president, I mean, this is, you know, two or three different layers of analysis, and we do offer these classes on war and security at Augusta University, but the president has to decide overall, you know, let's play some game theoretical analysis. And what that means is, do the costs outweigh the benefits, or do the benefits outweigh the costs? You do this at a theoretical and a practical level. How is this going to affect everything? What's the domino effect going to be? What are the unintended consequences? What are the blowback consequences that we're going to have? What about, as one of my favorite quotes and how I try to live my daily life and everything, is Donald Rumsfeld when he was Secretary of Defense, you know, what about the unknown unknowns? Never mind, you know, what we know we don't know.
Yeah.
But what about those unintended consequences that we have no idea are unintended consequences? You have to take that into consideration. How much is this going to cost? You have to play two-level games. That means you have to control for what the international audience's perception is going to be, but also you have to control for what your domestic audience is going to be, because you have to make sure you can maintain your power base as a party in office. If you're the president and you don't have a second term anymore, you know, you're on your seventh or eighth year, you still want to maintain your party's control over government, so you don't want to do anything that's going to sway the public in the opposite way. So you have all these considerations, and every listener should understand that no matter what countries publicly say, their interests is what dominates their foreign policy and their grand strategy over everything else. Self-interest rules the international arena. And so the first, and people might not think this is nice, but this is the way all governments in the world have historically always thought. It's one of the proven, we can't say proven, but we're just going to say laws of international relations, that states act in their self-interest first. So America, the United States, is not going to go to war, prevent a war, trade with anybody, stop trading with anybody, unless it believes that that action benefits it more than any other country. That's how we run our foreign policy. Now, Do we support human rights most of the time? Do we support democracy promotion most of the time? Do we support capitalism most of the time? Why do we support these things? Because those things implemented on the world stage benefit us. So we don't just do these to be altruistic, though sometimes we do. Even when we're being altruistic, we believe that we gain from that in the end. And that's the way we view international relations. We view it as a system of net loss and net worth and net gain.
When we come back, Dr. Albert, could you help us understand more about that by sharing with us how Republicans and Democrats apparently then have fundamentally the same
right.
concern,
yeah.
what's in America's best interest. But yet at the same time, we have very different approaches, they have very different approaches to trying to fulfill their mission of taking care of America's best interest.
Absolutely.
All right, our guest on this Power Friday, speaking power politics, Dr. Craig Albert, back with us in just a few.
We gotta change it, just you and me.